Do you want to learn interesting psychological information in an easy, straightforward, and entertaining manner? Then you need to listen to The Shrink Is In, a podcast show produced and hosted by Dr. Howard Gurr. Dr. Gurr is a practicing licensed psychologist for more than 25 years in New York State, and now he is available to you on the internet. Now, here's Dr. Howard Gurr.
Hey, it's Dr. Gurr with another psychological podcast, and today I'll be talking with Paul Brewer, who is an author and illustrator of children's books, with a particular interest in humorous stories. His specialty has become joke books, as he's written three of them so far. He wrote and illustrated You Must Be Joking and You Must Be Joking Too. These books include tips for remembering and telling jokes, plus how to perform them like a stand-up comedian. He also illustrated the popular Robert series of chapter books written by Barbara Suling, with titles like Oh No, It's Robert, Robert Takes a Stand, and Robert and the Happy Endings. His wife, Kathleen Kroll, wrote two lighthearted picture books called Clip, 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 Three Stories About Hair, and How to Trick-or-Treat in Outer Space that Paul illustrated. They also co-wrote a book called Fartiste, illustrated by Boris Kulikov. Paul and Kathleen just finished a book they co-wrote called Lincoln Tells a Joke, How Laughter Saved the President and the Country. It's about our famous president and his great sense of humor, which he used quite often to make himself and others around him feel comfortable. It was also a way to help him deal with his depression and the very turbulent times of his presidency. The book is slated to be published in 2010. Before we meet Paul Brewer, I just wanted to tell you that you could check out more about Paul at his website at www.paulbrewer.com. And now let's meet Paul Brewer. Paul, welcome to The Shrink Is In.
Well, thanks a lot for having me.
And as I said in the intro, your focus is children's humor and writing children's books and teaching kids really how to, tell jokes and be humorous. And I have to tell you that for years, that's something I've been trying to do both individually in counseling and in groups. And I have tremendous difficulty, for the most part, in the therapy groups, getting kids to be able to tell a good joke. So I guess my first question for you is why do you think it is hard for some kids to tell jokes?
That was a great question. Well, the first thing that I notice, I do a lot of school visits, and this may not actually count too well because we're talking about a kid that's in a room full of 40 other kids maybe, and they're going to get up and tell a joke to me, and, you know, they get shy. Well, shyness seems to be the first obvious problem, but of course if I had them tell me the joke with nobody else around, maybe they'd be able to blurt it out and it would not be a problem. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of tough on that front. I'm not really sure. I see it being, though, mostly the extroverted kids as opposed to introverted kids that are the ones that, you know, they're the ones that are really, they got their hand flying back and forth. I gotta tell this joke. And I can tell that they're extroverted. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the ones that are, you know, they might raise their hands and then sometimes they'll forget, you know, the joke when I get to them, or they'll tell me, but they'll tell me with such a soft voice, I can't hear it, you know, that, could you please repeat it, you know, or, you know, raise your voice just a tiny bit. And the other thing is that with jokes, you know, there's really just different kinds. You got your short jokes, like knock-knock jokes are so easy, it's anybody can do them because it's a template. Knock-knock, who's there and all that's your template. All you have to do is insert a word, and you got it, and you can do anything you want, you know. And it's not hard to remember, you know. It's, and kids, I mean, that's about 90% of all the jokes that I get when I do school visits. Riddles too, they're quite simple, but of course you got to remember certain elements there to make it work. The longer jokes are the ones that I see, kids having problems with, and those are the ones where you really have to want to tell a joke, and it's a bit of a, I think it's a bit of like a performance. I was just talking to my sister-in-law yesterday, who is a performer, has been a performer in the past, and she was saying it, you know, we both agreed that it is like a performance, like a tiny little performance. You gotta want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough. So particularly when it is a long joke, and kids are, you know, they don't want to blow it, you know. It makes them look bad.
You know, before we go on about, you know, jokes and telling jokes and remembering jokes, you know, it's an interesting concept to me about how people wind up where they wind up. And you're an author and illustrator of children's books, And I guess my question again would be, you know, how did you wind up there?
Yeah, good question. I was, well, as a kid, all through grade school, I was a doodler, mm-hmm. and I was a goof-offer, and I was a joker. mm-hmm. And I was always, you know, a ADD-type kid. You know, the teachers were always, you know, begging my mother, could you please, you know, tell Paul to kind of calm down, you know, and they'd work with me and try to get me, you know, by the end of the year, I'd be fine. But when next year, I'd start all over again. But I would just, you know, always goofing off and always telling jokes and doodling, not paying attention. So all through school, I was an okay student. But then when I got into high school, I was a terrible student. I was actually failing in high school up to 11th grade. Counselor called me and said, you know, and this is back in the day when they could actually create a curriculum to get you out. I don't think they do that anymore. But they said, you know, is there anything you can do? We want you to graduate. We don't want to hold you back. So, well, I'm an artist, and they gave me a bunch of art classes, which helped, and I graduated from high school. And I went to junior college for about a year and a half, and thought I'd become a commercial artist. But I got the travel bug about the same time. Two years out of high school, I went to Europe, and then I consequently went back a couple more times after that. And in between that time, when I come back, I go back to college. But then I kind of burn out on, I didn't think it was good. And I had just thought my art was not that great, wasn't going to be able to do anything with it. And so I quit going to school, and went for many years just doing other jobs, different jobs. I was a cabinet maker, drove a truck for a while, picture framer. And then I met my wife, Kathleen Krull, who is also a writer of children's books, and we've collaborated on books before. And she found out I was an artist, and, you know, she said, why don't you sketch some pictures of me? And she saw my stuff, and she said, why don't you sketch some pictures of me, which I did. And then that parlayed into, well, why don't you consider, you know, just for fun, go back to school, just, you know, night class, just take, you know, and I took some fun little classes in illustrating and cartooning and all that. And then I got serious, and I went to UCSD Extension night courses to get a certificate in graphic communications, which I did manage to get after probably 4 years of, you know, going at night. Took a bunch of classes, whole bunch of classes, great classes, and one in particular was illustrating books for children. And I took that and then got my first book mm-hmm. after sending out samples, and had a little help from my wife. She knew some people in the business, and so that's my education so far.
Mm-hmm. So you're a testimonial to those kids who were the class clowns in the back of the room who still could become successful.
Yeah, it's funny because I've said this before, where I goofed off, I told jokes and doodled. Now I get paid to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
Which is how ironic is that?
mm-hmm. Paul, tell me, I have this ability to retain jokes and tell jokes, and I always thought, as I said, that was a skill other people should have. But in your book, you must be joking. You have tips for remembering and telling jokes, and maybe you can explain some of them.
One of the basic tips I have in the book is, like, when you, this is just the most simple. If you try to visualize a joke as a picture, and, you know, what does Moby Dick eat for dinner? Fish and ships.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the basic idea is to just break it up into parts, and you remember Moby Dick, fish, plus you remember ships. This is just basic. This is basic in, you know, any different ways of remembering, you know, stuff you're trying to tell later. Just remembering keywords is what it is. And that's really just the basic premise is just that. And of course with kids, gotta practice a joke over and over again. Tell it to a lot of kids if you don't want to screw it up, or tell it to your parents over and over again or whatever. You know, annoy mm-hmm. your parents with the same joke.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically it. The second book, I also did a You Must Be Joking 2, And that one had tips for putting on a performance. And with that, I, you know, told kids, you know, have the first book to learn, you know, remember and you know, tell your own jokes. But also try, how about, you know, performing them, for like a school talent show or maybe a birthday party or something like that, where you dress up, you know, put on a wacky outfit, like a funny hat, a big, you know, silly looking bow tie, maybe even dress up as a clown or whatever, to memorize a bunch of jokes and then get up and, you know, do a, like a performance, you know, for other kids, you know, in a setting, like I said, a school play, talent show, birthday party, whatever, bar mitzvah, you know, you name it.
Yeah, it's really, you're right. To do that, you have to be the extroverted kid, because it's very hard to do, I think, for most people.
That's really tough. And that's asking a lot, that particular thing. I realize that anybody that is gonna try that is gonna be the extrovert, the kid that, you know, is a real performer.
Mm.
You're right.
I remember when I was a kid, when I was like 17 or 18, maybe 19 or so in that area, I had a phenomenal memory for jokes. I could hold on to hundreds and hundreds of them. And we used to do joke wars. Do you know what that is?
Or you just go back and forth?
Yeah. And we used to do
– get out?
Yeah. You had to respond with a joke that was connected to the joke the other person told.
Oh, I don't know that one.
So what would happen is if there was any connection, let's say you were talking about, a health issue or a war issue or a religious issue, that person would tell a joke. And then the next person had to tell a joke that was somewhat related to that topic. And we would do that for hours. I remember doing that for 3-4 hours, just going back and forth. And I'd wind up doing it with people who, after a while, you didn't even have to tell the joke. The other person just knew the punchline.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you'd say, and the rabbit died. Oh, okay. And then you'd go on to the next one. And we would do that for hours and hours and hours. And I would get invited to a lot of parties. And then I realized that I was getting invited to these parties because I was entertainment. And
wow. And
I just stopped doing it because I didn't want to be invited for these parties just because I was going to entertain the crowd, so to speak. And then I didn't get invited to parties anymore.
That's interesting.
But
yeah, my friends and I, we would just, we memorize jokes and just, you know, every time we saw each other, we try to, you know, come up with a brand new one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for years, when I was quite young.
Yeah, I can't do it anymore.
I can't do it either. I mean, I hear, you know, I remember I told you when we were interviewing before about on the phone about how I was in that market, and the old guy came out and told me a joke and then told me another one.
Right.
That was, mm-hmm. I found that, you know, quite amusing because, you know, like you and I, probably, you know, I don't tell jokes anymore. I mean, every once in a while I hear something that's really particularly funny and I have to tell my brother or somebody like that, just because it's so damn funny.
Mm-hmm.
But, I just, seems like the only people nowadays that tell jokes are, you know, they're usually pretty bad, you know, racist or sexist or that kind of, you know, joke, blonde
right.
jokes or whatever. Ones that are, you know, a little bit embarrassing. You don't want to tell them in a, you know, in a room full of people.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you think, Paul, that joke books are good for kids?
Yes. Several reasons why that is. Well, the first and obvious reason is that just, you know, having a good sense of humor is healthy. Laughing is healthy. It's it's in our DNA to laugh. It's in kids, in kids' DNA. You know, when you're born and you're, you know, I don't know, when you start smiling and then you start laughing, that just comes naturally. It's just built in. And when kids are, you know, before they start telling jokes, they're like saying things like poo poo or pee pee or what, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, to get each other to laugh. This is pre-joke. Before they start learning that. And they'll laugh at anything. And kids, you know, I read that once, and I even mentioned in one of my books, that kids laugh somewhere between 200 and 300 times a day. Now, joke books are good because that stimulates that. But the other thing that is great about joke books is that they get the reluctant readers to read. Because I've been to a lot of schools and libraries and talked to the librarians, and they say one of the most popular books that go out are the joke books. Get checked out a lot. You know, these, you know, it's primarily boys that read joke books and are the reluctant readers, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just the one kind of book that if it gets them interested in reading, maybe the next step will be, you know, they'll start reading, you know, Captain Underpants books. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's a very wildly popular series of books by Dave Pilkey that, you know, are very funny and silly and goofy. And, you know, they're loaded with underwear, which is, you know, kids love to talk about underwear and farting and whatever. And so, that might be the bridge. The joke book might be the bridge to the kid that never read a book before, but, you know, he's got to read those joke books.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think they're great. And I've had other people tell me, you know, teachers and librarians and that how good they think they are as well to get those reluctant readers reading.
Just want to remind the audience I'm talking to Paul Brewer, who's an author and illustrator of children's books, particularly with ones about humor and humorous stories. And Paul, what makes you want to write and illustrate these kinds of books?
Well, that goes back to, you know, the whole thing is being a kid. Every doodle that I did way back in grade school and all the way up through school, you know, high school when I was supposed to be paying attention, mm-hmm. all the doodles I did were generally humorous. You know, they would either be, you know, some silly face with big wild eyeballs and tongue hanging out or you name it, any kind of, you know, crazy little thing that had some sort of a humorous take on it. You know, and then when you get into high school and, well, you and I are the same age, you remember people used to draw, you know, dragsters and, you know, the guy with a big, you know,
right.
big eyeball, you know, like, what's the
Big Daddy?
Rat Fink and mm-hmm, you know, right. the whole car thing. The
right.
Big Chevy and all that. We drove, you know, but those were humorous as well, too, because they had, you know, things like that. So that was, you know, and I was into comic books when I was a kid. I always liked comics and always loved Mad Magazine mm-hmm. and the other magazines that came out of that era. And so, you know, my illustration style is cartoony. Because of the influence I have. I'm a really huge fan of New Yorker cartoons. I've always liked those for many, many years. I look at the New Yorker here, look at them every week. One of these days, I hope, I haven't submitted yet, but I understand there's a very long line of people that want to get in there, and it can take many, many, many years. One of the most popular guys, Booth, sent stuff for 20 years before they published him.
Mm.
So... That's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time, yeah.
You know, I think that may be one of the reasons why I'm reluctant to send in. But I love those kinds of things. So anyway, getting back to your question, though, as I love all things humorous. I love sense of humor, and I love the sense of humor in a book. And so that was the logical, you know, doing the joke books was one thing. I've also done a series of books called the Robert books. Started off with a book called Oh No, It's Robert, and it was written by a very good friend of mine now, Barbara Suling. And they're books about this kid he's a second grader. He goes into third grade during the series. We did this for 7 years, and we did 31 books in the series. And they're just humor stories. She's a very funny writer, and they're all about how Robert gets into some kind of trouble, not bad trouble, like, you know, he doesn't burn down the school or anything like that. But, you know, he leaves the fish that they were doing fish prints, you know, where you take the fish and put the paint on it and you print it onto a piece of paper. Well, he leaves the fish in the closet in the school where they put all the art supplies, locks it up, and come back after Thanksgiving weekend. So you can imagine what it smelled like.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that happens to him. Through all the different books. So I got the chance to do, you know, humorous illustrating and in that. And I have other stories in my head that are all humorous. So it really just goes back to the fact that, you know, like I said, now I get paid to do it. You know, that was my destiny to goof off, to tell jokes and doodle silly pictures. And, you know, here I am. So, and I love them, you know, and I don't want to do serious. You know, if somebody were to, you know, tell me they want me to do a story about a young girl whose pony dies or something like that, I'm not going to do it, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a sad story, you know.
Do you have other books planned for the future?
Yes. My wife and I collaborated on another book. It's called Lincoln Tells a Joke. Mm-hmm. And it is all about his, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with Abe Lincoln as being having a problem with depression.
Yeah, he was. I think there was some possible bipolar potential there.
Yeah, that's probably the diagnosis they think. Well, there's no way of telling, but that's what it sort of points to. But he loved to tell funny stories you know, every time anybody would come into his office, he would just, I got a story for you. He mm-hmm. didn't tell jokes so much because jokes were not really that big at that time. There were some around, but it was mainly just humorous stories and humorous, you know, takes on different situations that were going on at the time. So he always had that. In fact, his people that did not like Lincoln thought he was a buffoon. They thought, you know, this guy's an idiot. What's he doing telling jokes? He's supposed to be serious. He's running a country. He's going to run it into the ground because he's trying to be funny, and they didn't like him. And even John Wilkes Booth was one of the main reasons why he hated Lincoln, because he thought he was a buffoon because he was a joker and all that. He wanted him to be, you know, and of course he hated the fact that he was changing the country, you know, to abolish slavery and all that. And
I would say John Wilkes Booth didn't have a sense of humor then.
No, he did not. And it's ironic. And one of the ironic things that we think possibly happened, and it's mentioned in the book that we've done, I did not illustrate this particular one. We just, you know, collaborated on it, co-wrote it. But at the very his very last moments of life, he was watching a play, and the play was a humorous play. Mm-hmm. And Wilkes Booth knew the exact moments that there would be laughter, and there was a particular I don't remember what the name of the play was now, but there was a particular moment where everybody laughs, and that was the exact moment that he came bursting out of the door, which was right behind Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And back in the days before bodyguards, I guess, but he burst through the door and fired the shot, and people didn't really hear it because there was, you know, so much laughter going on. So it's probably possible that Lincoln died laughing, because Lincoln loved to laugh. He had a good sense of humor. Mm-hmm. And he was probably laughing at the very same moment that that bullet hit his head. So he went out laughing.
Okay.
Possibly. I mean, that's only speculation. We have no idea. But it's been, you know, said. So, and we said it.
Right.
So it must be true.
So therefore, it's true.
Therefore, it is.
Was that saying that if something said many, many times, eventually becomes reality?
Yeah, we've learned that through through a lot of the things we've had to put up with over years.
Do you believe that maintaining a sense of humor all through your life is important?
Oh, absolutely. I'd go crazy if I didn't have a sense of humor, I think.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing the research on the joke book, particularly You Must Be Joking, you know, I was reading all this stuff about how laughter, you know, produces endorphins. So that's something I didn't know till I found that out. So that, you know, that promotes good health. And so with what my wife and I do is we watch a lot of funny movies and funny TV. You know, we like the Jon Stewart Show. We like Stephen Colbert's show. We've, you know, always loved the Seinfeld show. Still sometimes watch them. The new Larry David show, you know, the one in Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Any stand-up comics, whatever. You know, we just, you know, we love to keep laughing all the time. I want to try and keep up with that 200 to 300 times a day, like kids, you know. So I'm probably not going to achieve that, but. But, you know, I'd like to do that.
I agree that laughter is significant in terms of maintaining, you know, a healthy body, a healthy mind. And I'll tell you, I've had people who were significantly depressed, and you know, one of the things I ask them to do sometimes is just like the next day, I say, all I want you to do is smile at everybody you see. I don't care that you feel terrible. I don't care that you feel depressed. I want you to smile at everybody and say hello. And 100% of the time they come back and they go, gee, you know, I felt better. And I said, that's exactly. All I asked you to do is one thing, and that was smile, and you felt better. And it's really because once you smile at people, they smile back.
Yep.
And it makes you feel a little bit better, even though it's minor. But
it's very minor, but it is good. I also think it's a really good for a healthy relationship too. When you know, if you're able to poke fun of it, like you have an argument, and then you're able to get over it with poking fun at it later. You got to be, you know, diplomacy is very important as well. When you do that, you can't, you know, you got to be real careful. But my wife and I have this strategy, and it works well for us. When if we get some sort of a fight or whatever, you know, within our short amount of time, we're back to, you know, kind of like poking fun, and then it's over. Once we've done the poking of the fun at one another, it is gone. It is, you know, we apologize. I'm sorry I said that. Blah blah whatever. And plus the humor is the icebreaker, but you know, brings it all back together.
I recommend people sometimes, by the way, Paul, just to in a similar vein, like get a cowbell. Or something that's just absolutely silly and stupid, and use that as a signal to say I'm done, you know, and that way it's kind of like, you know, a non-threatening signal, and it's silly, and they both can, you know, just kind of respond to it. And it basically is a good way to end an argument for people who have difficulty doing that.
Right. But one other thing I just wanted to insert in here real quick was about the importance of having a sense of humor. You can't see me right now, so you don't know my situation. But I have hands. I was born with hands that are deformed, and they look like severe arthritis, a severe arthritic condition, very, very unusual looking. And when I go out to school, I tell kids, I always tell them before I even get started, because there's always going to be a kid going, what's wrong with your hands? You know, and then they're quite amazed that I'm able to do what I've done. And I've had problems through, you know, high school in particular. It was junior high, and high was difficult. You know, I was, teased out of, you know, it's just going to happen. There's no way it's not going to happen. You do get teased when you have something wrong with you. And I had a decent sense of humor about it. I mean, it hurt, but I didn't miss any school. I didn't get, you know, suicidal or anything like that. I handled it pretty well.
Paul, unfortunately, we're out of time.
Are we at the end?
Yeah. So I just want to remind the audience that I've been talking to Paul Brewer, who is an author and illustrator of children's books and has a particular interest in humorous stories and joke books. And if you want to take a look, find his books. It's You Must Be Joking, You Must Be Joking Too, or look for the Oh No, It's Robert, or Robert Takes a Stand, or Robert to Happy Endings. And take a look, find his books. And if you're a kid out there, our recommendation is learn how to tell jokes, because it's like it's like chicken soup. It may not help, but it couldn't hurt. So I want to thank you again, Paul, for being on The Shrink Is In.
And, well, I thank you for having me. This was a very nice little talk we had.
Okay, that's terrific, and I'm glad to hear it. And till next time, this is Dr. Gurr for The Shrink Is In.
You have been listening to The Shrink Is In, and your host has been Dr. Howard Gurr. If you want to learn more about Dr. Gurr, go to his website at www.drsgurr.com.